Good morning, and welcome once again to Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science community here on WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. My name is Ernie Hood, and I'm a freelance science writer here in the area, and each week here on the program, we bring you cutting-edge information about what's going on in science, both here in the Triangle area and elsewhere. We focus each week on a particular scientific topic of interest, and we like to attract experts on the subject, as we have today, and give you the opportunity to call in with your questions or comments. The number to the radio station is 929-9601, and you are welcome to join the conversation at any time. And you can also access all of our past Radio In Vivo programs on our website, which is home.earthlink.net/radioinvivo. This week on Radio In Vivo, we are going to be discussing the ancient Chinese healing art known as acupuncture. Since it was introduced in the West in the early 70s, acupuncture has gained widespread acceptance as a safe and effective therapy in a wide variety of areas. According to the 2002 National Health Interview Survey, the largest study to date of the use of complementary and alternative medicines by American adults, some 8.2 million U.S. adults have used acupuncture. Although it has been shown to be beneficial, like so many of our treatments, we still don't exactly know how or why it works so well. Today on Radio In Vivo, I am very pleased to welcome two guests who are both practitioners and researchers of acupuncture. Dr. Remy Queteau is an assistant professor in the Department of Family Medicine at the UNC School of Medicine, where Dr. Wunyan Chen is a clinical instructor and an expert in traditional Chinese medicine. Gentlemen, thank you very much for taking the time to join me on Radio In Vivo today.
Thank you. It's our pleasure.
Thank you.
All right. I'd like to start, as I often do, by defining our terms. And either of you can feel free to take the ball on this. Exactly what is acupuncture, and what is involved in performing the procedure?
Acupuncture involved in by using the needle, mm-hmm. It's about the length from the one half inch to up to 3-4 inches. Very fine needle, like the hair. Uh-huh. Yeah, sticking the specific part of the body, try to stimulate the energy flow. And once the needle put in the body, we generally like the patient sit there for about 30 minutes to 60 minutes. It's most common.
I see.
Yeah, and then we take the needle out. That's the procedure.
I see. Okay. Well, both of you are actually credentialed medical acupuncturists. One at a time, Wunyan, we could start with you. How did you become interested in this field, and what did it take to learn and perfect the techniques?
Oh, well, that's probably, I have to go back to about 30 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, when my father had back pain, it went through a severe, very severe pain. And he almost completely disabled. Mm-hmm. And we invited acupuncturist, went to our home, gave him the treatment, and I saw the treatment. Three treatments make completely difference, and my father was able to be completely recovered. That's really, really, really.
I see.
You know, yeah, inspired me. So I learned acupuncture about 5 years later.
I see. I see.
Yeah.
And
in China.
Remy, how about you?
Well, I had just completed my training in family medicine and conventional Western medicine, and I had come to Chapel Hill, to University of North Carolina, to participate in a 2-year research training program. I was very interested in researching pain conditions, specifically headache was my primary interest. Mm-hmm. And as I was looking at really understanding what was available in terms of the information known in the published literature, I found that there was a fair amount of evidence that suggested that acupuncture might be helpful for many pain conditions such as headaches. And that intrigued me. And as somebody who is also being trained in clinical research, I also saw an opportunity to engage in very intellectually satisfying and creative research, a wide open field, to look at the efficacy of acupuncture, because at that time, it was about 7 years ago, there had not been very many large clinical trials published looking at the efficacy of acupuncture. There had been several small studies, but there really were just a handful and really hardly any very good, well-designed studies that were very informative yet. So I thought, well, this is a nice opportunity for me to enter the field in an interesting area and also potentially have an impact, because it appeared that acupuncture was helpful, but I wanted to see if we could demonstrate that more in a more definitive manner.
Sure.
So I was fortunate to have my training program train me. Basically, they paid for a very good training program at the UCLA School of Medicine designed for physicians. And so I went there and I learned how to perform acupuncture. At the time, I was looking at it as a researcher. I was not planning on practicing it myself. I assumed that I would not be able to know and learn enough to be a competent practitioner.
Uh-huh.
But the training program was very good, and by the end of it, I felt competent enough to start a clinical career as well. And I became very interested, and I really enjoyed it. And so soon thereafter, I had the other great fortune of being able to find Dr. Chen. And so he and I have been clinical and research colleagues ever since, 5 or 6 years ago now, at UNC in both the research and clinical capacity.
I see. Now, just out of curiosity, what did it take to become, was there a licensing procedure? Did you have to pass board exams or something like that?
There are essentially two ways of becoming an acupuncturist in the United States. Well, there may be three, but two well-established ways.
Mm-hmm.
One is to go the way I did it, and the other is to go the way Dr. Chen did it. And we represent the two main avenues.
The yin and the yang.
That's well said. That's very well said. So physicians can enter it by getting a training course. And the one that I chose is the one that trains most physicians in the United States. But there are a few other courses there. And it's on the order of 200 or 300 hours of training, as opposed to on the order of 2,000 to 3,000 hours of training to become a licensed acupuncturist. So you can become an acupuncturist the second route, which is to go through an acupuncture training program. In the United States, it's 3 to 5 years,
mm-hmm.
and it is a professional training course. And then you can come out, you do come out and eligible for being licensed in traditional Chinese medicine, including acupuncture.
I see.
I am not a licensed acupuncturist because I did not do that training, but I am a licensed physician, and as such, I am permitted and allowed to practice. I also have credentials, which is really a more limited. It just means that at least at UNC, Dr. Chen and I, who are both credentialed, have the opportunity to provide acupuncture services throughout the university, the medical center.
I see. Are there people out there practicing acupuncture who are not credentialed nor licensed?
Well, that would probably represent the third way that I had in mind. As a healthcare professional, there are opportunities to use acupuncture needles in a therapeutic way, or certainly intentionally therapeutic way.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, you can practice, do procedures that can be called acupuncture without being either a licensed acupuncturist or a physician. And some people may get very good results from that, but some people would argue, well, that isn't necessarily quite at the standard of true acupuncture. It depends on how good one is. But it is possible to provide acupuncture without having the official sanctioning of regulatory bodies.
I see. What are the techniques, specific techniques involved? I understand that there's more to it than just, you know, inserting the needles. I understand there are different types of needles for different procedures and different manipulations that happen once you have put the needles in.
Yes. Well, in addition to the dry needle, we also could put the it's called a maxa. Yeah, maxa is kind of the herbal, and then we burn the herbal. So we hold the maxa very close to the skin, and that heat can be a very good way to heal the body. That's called a maxa. And
may I just add, that is also known as mugwort, is the herb, and the process is called, the procedure is called moxibustion, or moxa for short, and it's an herb that is not unlike tobacco, but is not tobacco, but is not unlike it.
I see.
Uh-huh. Yes. Out of the dry needle moxa, and we also could use the cupping. Cupping is involved in we use the glass or anciently use the bamboo, so that burn the inside of the glass cup, mm-hmm. and so make a vacuum, and then quickly apply that negative pressure cup into the skin, under the skin area, just, you know, to suck the skin into the cups, so make the could make the pain go away or increase the range of motions.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So is that a form of acupressure?
No, that's also the form of the acupuncture, probably.
I see.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's not involved the needle, but you very often to use with acupuncture needle.
I see.
Yeah, and also we, in addition to the dry needle, we also applied the electrical stimulator to the needle.
Mm-hmm.
So that's called electrical acupuncture. So that's very common used for pain reduction.
I see.
Yeah.
And go ahead, Remy.
I think this illustrates the fact that there are many procedures, therapeutic modalities that are all used in conjunction with one another under the larger rubric of traditional Chinese medicine. Now, there are many traditional healing modalities and disciplines throughout the world and throughout history. Traditional Chinese medicine is one that happens to be a little bit better known in the United States. It's by no means the only or necessarily the most important, but it is one of the more important ones that has been introduced into the Western world. Acupuncture is one of many different modalities that is used under the overall traditional Chinese medicine approach, and the ones that Dr. Chen mentioned are the main ones, including Chinese herbal therapy is also very important. But it's also important to realize then that acupuncture is really a subset of this larger world of many very effective or potentially very effective therapeutic modalities. And unfortunately, in a way, in the United States, we tend to use it more as a procedure. And in the training that I had, we use it as a procedure.
I see.
And that limits it. That is a fairly limited scope of use, which is one of the many reasons why I think it's very, very useful to have a team approach with a medical provider and a traditional Chinese medicine clinician, because then the acupuncture is much more powerful than just a procedure.
Sure, sure. Well, we will get into, you know, some of the philosophical backdrops a little bit later. I want to get some hard facts for now. First of all, have both of you received acupuncture treatments yourself? And if so, what was it like being on the receiving end? And did it have a therapeutic effect for you?
Oh, yes. I got an acupuncture treatment from other practitioner, like Dr. Remy Cueto. And I also treat myself anytime I feel I need it. Usually I think that I treat myself. It's very important. The first is important for my practice. So I know that what a patient is going to be feel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very great way to understand it more deeply about acupuncture. What I feel from the treatment is when the needle crosses the skin, sometimes I can feel a tiny pinprick.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
After that, I could feel or nothing. But most of the time, I feel some kind of a weird sensation. It's not weird for me now. I mean, the patient often reported weird.
Sure.
Yeah. Most of the common feeling I have is the kind of pressure or referred sensation. Let's say if I put it on the arm or feet, I can feel something move to my body. Or I put it to my arm, and then I feel something going down to my hand. That's kind of a referral sensation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the most commonly felt things. And I feel the feeling spread out from the needle point to the whole, to the rest of the body sometimes.
So you know you've hit the right spot at that point.
Right. That's called de qi, or, yeah.
Right. Remy, how about you?
Well, in our training program, we all practice on each other, and we learn what it's like to be on the receiving end. My first very significant experience was towards the end of the training program, where we were all told how to use this treatment called the Super Ming Men treatment, and it's It's meant to really increase energy for people who, and most people in this country could use a little extra energy. And
I could.
It's a very popular treatment, and there are many things that I can benefit from, but that was not one that I needed. I have plenty of energy. I made it through medical school and residency without caffeine, and I actually don't usually.
I thought that
go
was impossible.
but I wanted to experience this, so I did, and I had a very effective treatment, and I did not sleep through the night. I was just completely wide awake, very alert, and just very full of energy, and I did not sleep that night at all.
Wow. So, in your practice, I take it that you really practice together as a team mm-hmm. approach. How many patients do you treat on average, and how many visits are typically required?
We usually treat 5 to 10 patients per half days. Now, for the patients, how many treatments required depends on really on different condition they mm-hmm. have. Yeah, mm-hmm. for the some acute condition, maybe 2 to 3 treatments is enough. And for the chronic condition, that really depends on the how much damage the body gets. Usually, the more chronic, more more complicated condition, we need more treatment. We like to give the little bit intensive treatment at the beginning, first 3 to 5 weeks, and then after that, we try to keep the maintenance treatment.
I see.
For another several months.
Why is it that multiple treatments are typically required?
Well, simply say, just it takes time to fix the damage in the body. Mm-hmm. Some damage probably never be able to fix, but we try to maintain the normal function. It's just need more treatment, but from scientifically. It's more related to the anti-inflammation, the increased blood flow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just takes time, like the medication sometimes.
Indeed.
Yeah, it takes. Yeah. You have to take it for a while.
Sure. You don't go for one visit for usually whatever your complaint might be.
Right.
And what types of conditions do you often treat, and how do you, within the UNC healthcare system, get your referrals? How do patients end up at your door?
Well, we work at the Family Medicine Center, which is a large primary care practice, and so there are many of our colleagues really appreciate us being there and offering the service, because there are many conditions seen in the primary care setting that don't respond fully to what we have to offer in primary care. So that's one way. But really, about half our patients come from word of mouth and from the other patients. But also, when a patient is seeking acupuncture, we most of our colleagues at UNC as a whole know that we have this clinic there. And so it word of mouth ends up coming to the Family Medicine Center because they know that we practice there. But it's also important to know that there are many providers in the community, many very, very good providers in the community, and there are most of the ones in the community are the licensed acupuncturists that we talked about.
Sure.
There are few medical acupuncturists in the community. So for the patients who require a physician to be participating in their care for the medical insurance, we were more likely to be the ones to see those patients. Our setting, even though we're very fortunate to be in the Family Medicine Building, which is a nice setting, is not really quite as conducive to a really nice relaxation therapy. There's still exam rooms, visiting exam rooms. And so one of the limitations that we have is the actual physical setting in which we practice. Ideally, it'd be nice to have a not quite so medical setting where we can also practice.
Sure, sure. My guest this morning on Radio In Vivo are Drs. Wunyan Chen and Remy Kueto from UNC School of Medicine, and we are talking about acupuncture and their practice thereof. You mentioned insurance, Remy, and obviously that's important to a lot of people. Is acupuncture treatment, at least in your practice, typically covered by insurance plans?
Most of our patients have acupuncture as one of the benefits. Now, I can't, that's a selected sample. I don't know yet what percentage of people in this region have insurance that covers acupuncture. I think we're below 50%. But some of the most important insurance plans here in this area do cover acupuncture quite well. Well, the caveat is that most of these plans require that it be under the care of a physician, which I personally think is it more of a political and an unfortunate situation, because the care that we give is not necessarily better by any means than those of a licensed acupuncturist. But because medical insurance tends to be more of a medical nature, they've kept it within that scope. I hope that will change soon. But for now, most of the people who come to us who have health insurance coverage require that a licensed physician be part of the care.
I see. And is acupuncture in your context, is it typically primary therapy, or does it exist as an adjunct to more standard medical care?
We just had this discussion, Dr. Chen and I, just yesterday about his observation, because he also works at Plum Spring Clinic, which is a clinic in Southern Village in Chapel Hill. And so he spends most of his time at UNC, but also work in Plum Spring Clinic. And it appears to be a different selection of patients. And why don't you say what you were your observations about that?
What I find out is the patients go to UNC seems much, much more broad. I mean, their condition from the heart condition, vascular condition, to the muscular skeletal condition. Now, patients to the Plum Spring Clinic, there's most pain and hypertension. So the reason I'm saying that the difference is I find out seems their response more to acupuncture sometimes, you know. I don't know.
at the clinic, you mean that you get a better response, you seem?
Yes, you know, some patients, you know, get a more better response in the Plum Spring Clinic, and some other patients get a more response from the family setting. I don't know why. So basically what I mean is that the patient population is a little bit slightly different between these two settings I'm practicing.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned several different conditions that people
come
to you, and I did want to explore that a little bit. What are the types of conditions that are conducive to treatment with acupuncture?
The conditions to response to acupuncture, probably the best, the most common condition they go to acupuncture is pain. Mm-hmm. All kinds of pains, chronic pain, low back pain, neck pain, shoulder pain. That's the most common condition to acupuncture. And the other condition is what I treat is hypertension, fatigue, IBS, headache, chronic headache is included in the pain. So we treat a lot.
Sure, yeah. Sure. And do you see the same thing, Remy?
Yes, since I don't work at Plum Spring Clinic, I don't see the patient population, but I understand how this happens. The referral system is a little bit different. And also what we're trying to achieve in our primary care clinic is really trying to integrate as best as we can acupuncture and traditional Chinese medicine to help with common primary care problems. Mm-hmm. But we aren't seeing the people who are coming to see us does not represent the full range of problems for which we can really help. So there's a bit of a disconnect between the reasons people are coming to see us and what we can actually offer. Mm-hmm. And there are many indications for which acupuncture is potentially very useful that we actually aren't seeing. For instance, health maintenance, well-being, a sense of really keeping a prevention of developing problems. I don't know. I can't be certain about this, but I really believe that acupuncture can be helpful with that, that there's a sense of health maintenance. And then another series of conditions for which many people don't think about acupuncture there's also including sinus congestion, very, very responsive. And that's one of those where you get an immediate response usually. You don't usually need to come for several treatments. There's a physiologic response that occurs that opens up what we call the ostia or the openings in the sinuses.
Sure.
And it allows for immediate drainage. And then what was a chronic problem can become not a problem sometimes if we're fortunate it was just one treatment. But mm-hmm. people may not think to do that. Hypertension, Dr. Chen mentioned that people may not think to do that, to use acupuncture for that, but it can be highly effective for that. It's really a homeostatic mechanism that comes into play. By that I mean most acupuncturists, and myself included, believe that acupuncture works in large part by by bringing the body back to equilibrium, by really bringing homeostasis, which is really this type of equilibrium. Mm-hmm. And hypertension is a good example of something that is the homeostasis is not, it's out of equilibrium, and
sure.
acupuncture can help bring that down. Now, what's interesting about acupuncture, and again, hypertension or blood pressure control is illustrates as well, is that it's very difficult, and it may even be largely impossible, to overshoot a goal with acupuncture. Unlike with medicines, where you can overshoot your goal, you can give too much medicine and you can go too far. And hypertension, again, is a good example. You can give some medicine, some blood pressure-lowering medicines can bring a blood pressure too low.
Sure.
That doesn't seem to happen with acupuncture. There, acupuncture can be helpful for very low blood pressure. People who have just fainted can respond very quickly and get their blood pressure back. People who have had high blood pressure can have the blood pressure come down much more closer than normal.
That's a very good example.
But we don't go too far. It'll bring it close to where it needs to be, and then really the body needs to do the rest, and it's not so powerful that it gets you exactly where you want to go, but it definitely brings you in the right direction. True also for blood flow in an area. So an acute injury to, say, an ankle, for instance, usually is there's swelling, there's redness, there's heat, there's a lot of blood flow there. And with that blood flow comes more inflammation, and the goal is to decrease that. And how do we do that in Western medicine? We compress it with an ace bandage, apply ice, elevate the foot. We're trying to reduce the blood flow, which is appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
If one has a chronic joint injury, usually it's the opposite problem. We're actually trying to help increase the blood flow, and also soft tissue injuries such as plantar fasciitis, a chronic injury of the sole of the foot. Increasing the blood flow, or as we would say in acupuncture world, qi,
sure.
or energy, mm-hmm. that is helpful. Well, the reason I mention this is because a similar set of acupuncture points can take a hot swollen ankle and immediately, invisibly, right away, decrease the swelling. And if it were an acute injury, but mm-hmm. a very similar treatment when applied to a chronic ankle injury will yield the opposite result. So it shows the homeostatic effects.
I see. Well, it sounds like NFL teams should have an acupuncturist on the sidelines.
Well, that's a very interesting point. There are more and more athletic teams have acupuncturists. And this brings in one of the many advantages of acupuncture is that it is effective for many conditions, and it doesn't have the side effects both medically of some certain medications, but also in the sports world of the anabolic steroid type of problems.
Sure.
So I do know, and I have a very short list, but I know there are many more on this list of teams that have acupuncturists. I know that the Canadian track and field Olympic track and field team of Canada happens to have an acupuncturist because I know who he is, and he went to the last summer Olympics and he was extremely busy and had very, very, very good success with athletes who otherwise would have been out of competition. Mm-hmm. And there are NFL players that will publicly acknowledge having had acupuncture that helps them get back to playing time. I would like to see more acupuncture in the sports medicine world.
I say, well, I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, I think I read somewhere that Roy Williams had even had some treatment.
I don't know.
For some lower back pain. So maybe we'll see you on the sidelines of the Tar Heel basketball games in the near future. You've touched on this, but I want to ask fairly specifically, how safe is acupuncture?
Well, I think the acupuncture performed by the medical acupuncture and the licensed acupuncturist is extremely safe, or is very safe. Very safe, yes. We didn't see any big injury reported on them on the magazine over the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because we did acupuncture adverse effect study, so which tracked the article. So
here is a piece of information that will speak to the safety of acupuncture. Medical malpractice, as I think most people know, the insurance premiums are very high, easily in the tens of thousands of dollars for physicians.
Sure.
Well, for Dr. Chen, in our current practice, I think it's fair to say this
yeah.
on public waves, what it costs. is $600 for full scope of practice in acupuncture. And that suggests that there really are very few malpractice claims. And there really are very few serious adverse events that occur. Now, they can happen. They absolutely can happen. And they've been mm-hmm. known to happen.
Okay.
There have been puncture of a lung, or it's actually I'm aware of four or five of them that have been published. And then there are a few very, very unusual events from having an acupuncture needle, maybe, you know, go in and puncture an organ. But in the hands of a skilled practitioner who has a good understanding of anatomy, which any licensed acupuncturist or physician should have, mm-hmm. those are exceedingly rare. Now, infection is something that needs to be discussed, but nowadays we all use, or I believe should, I believe every practitioner does this, is to use these single-use sterile needles that are disposable, so there's no risk of transmission of infectious diseases.
Sure.
But interestingly enough, there's extremely low likelihood of a localized infection from puncturing the skin, which is not sterile, and going into the deeper under the skin. That just doesn't happen.
Unlike with injections.
Well, yes.
That's very common.
One of the things that most people at their first time coming to an acupuncture appointment are surprised at is how small the needles are. And they're used to needles that are large bore needles that actually have a lumen, have an opening that actually needs room to pass the fluid through that. It's hundreds of times larger in diameter than an acupuncture needle. And so there's much greater surface area that is being involved in the larger injections. And acupuncture needles are so small that they really displace the tissues rather than puncture them, which is why we rarely see bleeding. Occasionally, in certain areas in the scalp or other areas, you might get a little drop of blood. Mm-hmm. But that's maybe 2 or 3 out of 100 needles. There's very little bleeding because it's really not damaging the tissues. Now, there's a little bit of what we call a micro-injury, and maybe that's actually part of the therapeutic process. By actually injuring, if you will, a little bit the tissues, that may set up a physiologic response that ends up being helpful. I'm not saying that it has no effect or no minor damage. It probably does, but it's not anything like the larger needles that we're used to.
I see. You're listening to Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science community on WCOMLP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro this morning. And my guests are doctors Wunyan Chen and Remy Kueto from UNC School of Medicine. And we are learning all about acupuncture. And I know that both of you are not only practitioners, but are also quite involved with research in the field, and certainly want to transition into hearing a lot about that. Why don't we start with you telling us about the study you published last year about your investigation of the use of acupuncture to treat chronic daily headache. Just to get you started, you had 74 patients receiving 10 treatments over the course of 6 weeks, and found that the treatment group was 3.7 times more likely to report less suffering from headaches after 6 weeks. So it sounds like that trial was very successful.
Yes, and I'll address this question. So, as I mentioned earlier in the program, my particular interest in acupuncture was with headaches. And mm-hmm. Dr. Chen and I designed the study and conducted the study together. It was funded by the National Institutes of Health. And together, we decided to focus on chronic daily headache for several reasons. One reason is that is a serious condition that is now becoming more appreciated over the last few years. We're seeing much more in the medical literature and also in the New York Times and in the lay press about how many people, and it's consistently about 4% of adults worldwide in just about every developing country, or excuse me, developed country. Mm-hmm. We don't have the data for developing countries that I know of. It's about 4%, which is fairly significant.
It's a huge number of people.
It is. And this condition, chronic daily headache, has a number of features that really lends itself well to the study of acupuncture. One of which is that it's a chronic pain condition, and it's easier from a scientific point of view to demonstrate efficacy with a daily pain situation than, say, migraines, which you might get 3 or 4 severe headaches a month. It mm-hmm. just takes many more resources, many more months before you can document statistically significant changes in the number of headache days. That should be done. That is being done. That's fine. I think that's also important. However, from a from a strategic point of view, it if we're going to trying to demonstrate efficacy, it's better to use something where we can really show in a shorter period of time a decrease in number of days or severity of pain. So that was one reason. But
sure,
the more important reason is that
there are a number of other people looking into chronic daily headache as a...
Yes, but we're the team that does chronic daily headache for acupuncture. To my knowledge, we're really the ones who are doing that. We're the only ones with the NIH funding, and I don't know of other teams that are looking at chronic daily headache. Now,
okay.
There are other very, very good investigators looking at migraine, tension headache, other forms of frequent headaches. But the chronic daily headache has a specific meaning, which is headaches 15 or more days per month.
Mm-hmm.
But the real issue here is that we've learned over the past 10 years or so that chronic daily headache is often caused by medication. The current thinking, and this is the majority of headache specialists believe this, and there's good evidence to back this up, is that the process from going from an episodic headache syndrome, such as migraines, to a chronic headache syndrome is often and probably usually precipitated by the use of medications, an overuse of medications. So mm-hmm. This chronic daily headache is also known as medication overuse.
So it's a rebound effect.
A rebound effect, exactly. Exactly right. And so that has become very clear over the last 10 years. So what this means is that migraine headaches are very, very, very common, and we have a number of very effective medications for migraine headaches. However, not everybody's using the medicines appropriately, and they may not have access to the expensive triptan medications, which are the most effective by and large. Mm-hmm. And so many people will use the over-the-counter medicines or overuse or misuse the prescription medicines. And they get into this cycle where they're using more and more medications, and their headaches are becoming more chronic and more daily, and then it's very difficult to get out of that cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So acupuncture is a non-pharmacological approach to the treatment of headaches. And so if we can demonstrate, and we did in the study, we demonstrated that a non-pharmacological approach was really remarkably effective in the reduction of many of the disabilities associated with chronic daily headache, including, and we also were able to decrease the amount of medication that was used. So that's the first step. The next step that I would like to study, when we get the funding, we have several grants under review,
uh-huh.
is really to see if we can't prevent the development of chronic daily headache, to prevent that going from this episodic migraine situation to chronic daily headache by not using as much medication, by using acupuncture as an adjunct to help in that. And I'm convinced that is the case. And we don't have the data to prove that yet.
Sure.
But I'm convinced that if we were to use acupuncture earlier on in the process, before chronic daily headache develops, such as people who have migraines, and we use that along with their medications, I think that would be a very appropriate use of resources.
I see. Wunyan, let me ask you. I understand mm-hmm. that in this particular study, you customized the treatment group according to each individual's needs.
Mm-hmm.
The treatment was individualized. How did that work?
Well, it was based on acupuncture theory or Chinese medicine theory. Headache is a part of the symptoms. This is different from the Western medicine. So headache alone, we cannot, it's not a whole picture anyway. So acupuncture diagnosis involves the whole body's assessment. So usually the most common things we think is a kind of congestion or liver yang rising or deficiency. That's a very common pattern we saw in our study.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to treat it differently.
I see.
Yeah.
I see. I want to talk a little bit about, associated with this study, about the placebo effect. Now, I understand that this trial was not a placebo-controlled trial.
That is correct.
But I understand that you do plan to incorporate placebo control in your future work. And the placebo that I guess is commonly used in studies of this nature, I know you kindly send me some of the other recent studies, is what's known as sham acupuncture. What is that?
Sham acupuncture is an attempt to to create a placebo procedure for the use of clinical trials and for clinical trials only. It's not intended to be used in practice. So, and this is an area of great interest to me, but it's still quite very problematic in that the randomized double-blind placebo-controlled clinical trial is, many people call it the gold standard. It is the way we assess efficacy for many medical inventions, and it is the standard for pharmaceutical interventions, and I think it's as it should be.
Sure.
And one of the many purposes to having a placebo intervention in the course of a clinical trial is to see what happens with objective outcome measures without either the subject, the person, the volunteer in the trial, knowing really what exactly they're getting, and without the people who are assessing the outcomes knowing. Now, that's fine, and that's appropriate, and that works when you can have a essentially physiologically inert intervention, which one can do with a pill with molecularly inert substances. Not sugar, because sugar has an effect, but, the sugar pill equivalent.
Right, right.
Now, the problem with acupuncture and the problem with surgery and the problem with many other and counseling, for that matter.
Yeah, it's a kind of procedure study.
It's a procedure. And it's very difficult to have an inert intervention that is really masking or blinding or fooling the patient. Now, it doesn't mean that it's impossible. It isn't. It's just that there are limitations. And so one of the approaches that has been developed is to use one of many different types of sham acupuncture. It usually means the insertion of acupuncture needles in the body at locations that are sometimes close to, but certainly not at the points that an experienced acupuncturist would use in a therapeutic environment or with intention to heal. So that was and probably still is the standard placebo intervention for clinical trials. And it has usefulness, but it also has a lot of limitations. So the question that you raised, Renny, about the placebo is very important and is one that's very interesting to both of us. But there are a number of ways you can go about it. Now, the more recent published trials that have been done mostly in Europe, and some very good ones, and I sent you a couple that were done for headache. So there were three very important, very influential papers published in the last 2 years. One 2 years ago in the British Medical Journal, actually a year and a half ago in the British Medical Journal, BMJ, and then this year in JAMA and BMJ. And those are two of the top medical journals in the world, and they had what two of those did, and these were done in Germany. They had three groups in the clinical trial. There was the one that we used, which was individualized treatment, and then the no treatment, which is what the two in our group, and they had a third one, which we also are using in other studies that we're doing now, which is a sham acupuncture group. Now, the advantage of using three comparisons is that you can make more than one comparison. The advantage of using three comparison groups is that you can make more than one comparison.
Sure.
And what these two studies have shown, one was on migraine and one was acupuncture for migraine, the other was acupuncture for tension type headache. Both showed very remarkable and clear statistically and clinically significant improvement associated with acupuncture compared to no acupuncture. And the magnitude of effect was very similar to that of our study. And very similar to the one in the done in England in published in the British Medical Journal. But these other two studies had this third group, and that was a sham acupuncture group. And that the results from that group were very similar to those of the true acupuncture.
Right.
So there were no significant differences between the sham acupuncture and the true acupuncture. Now, there are two ways of interpreting that. One is that clearly acupuncture doesn't work because it's not better than placebo, and it's a placebo effect. It's expectations. It's people wishing they want to get better, expecting to get better, etc.
Sure.
And that is an accurate interpretation. One can justifiably interpret the results that way.
Yeah, you cannot underestimate the power of the placebo effect.
Very true. So the placebo effect may be is very powerful, and based on these studies could explain all of what acupuncture does based on just these studies. And maybe that's the case. Now, I think it's actually much more complicated than that. I think that even though the placebo effect is working, is having an effect and is part of the therapeutic package, it's not all of it. That acupuncture is probably having a physiological effect. There are a lot of other evidence to suggest that. But the other interpretation that is consistent with what I just said of these two trials with no difference between sham and true acupuncture is that sham acupuncture is physiologically active, that it is not inert, that it is not the equivalent of a sugar pill,
right.
And that there is something going on with the insertion of needles that is having a physiological effect that is not just placebo. Personally, I think that that's what's going on, that it's much more complex and that is part of the issue. So it becomes challenging to sort those out. Now, in the next 10 years, I think that will have been accomplished. There are many very good investigators who are putting their minds to this. We're involved in groups of collaborators. We're collaborating with those very investigators. We are going to find solutions. And there are very creative ways of going about it. But no one study can do it. We need to look at it from different ways. And right now, there is a tremendous amount of resources being spent on acupuncture research, which I think is as it should. Because mm-hmm. as you mentioned earlier on, there are millions of people getting acupuncture, and it behooves us as society to really investigate this to see, are they wasting their money, or are we missing out on a potentially very important intervention that really should be available to more people? And this very active period of research that is being funded by the National Institutes of Health, by many foundations, by really many reputable sources of investigative activity is going to yield some very, very useful information in the years to come.
I imagine so. Now, is this do you get grants or are working on grants from the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine?
Yes, that NIH Institute funded the clinical trial that we mentioned that was published last year on headache. Mm-hmm. I am the recipient of a 5-year career development award where the NIH has invested for 5 years of my career at UNC. Most of my salary is paid for by them in order to investigate the efficacy and mechanism of acupuncture for headache. So there's that. We have other grants. We have another clinical trial right now that is looking at the efficacy of acupuncture for labor induction.
That was my next question, actually. AcuMom, I love the title.
Yes.
That is wonderful.
And that is being funded by the American Association of Family Physicians.
Uh-huh.
But we have another grant, a larger grant application in right now to the National Institutes of Health to fund AcuMoms 3. So we funded we've completed AcuMoms 1, which was 56 women who we compared acupuncture to no acupuncture, and that study demonstrated that of the women who did not get acupuncture, 39% of them delivered by cesarean section.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Of those who did get acupuncture, and they were randomly assigned to the two groups, 17%. So half of the people we have the cesarean rate.
Right. So what is the intent of applying the acupuncture in that situation? Is it to induce labor?
Well, that's a very important point, because the reason the AcuMoms 1 isn't, we can't say definitively, oh, well, acupuncture decreases cesarean section rates, is because that's not what we set out to prove.
Mm-hmm.
That was not how we powered the study, and that was not our primary outcome. And one always has to be very cautious in interpreting results of clinical trials when you find a secondary finding that you didn't anticipate. So that's why I'm not, I'm putting these disclaimers. And to answer your question, our intent, the intent that we had in designing AcuMoms 1 was similar to the intent from two other studies that had been published, which was to shorten the time of labor. So I did use the term induction. We are using it at times, but it really is a misnomer. I don't see acupuncture as an inductive agent. We see it together. Dr. Chen and I and many other acupuncturists, and I think many of them in the community, use and see acupuncture as a way of initiating, maybe, but at least preparing a woman who's about to go into labor, preparing her and preparing her body for a more better and safer labor.
I see.
And so we think that acupuncture can be very effective, we think, but we're still trying to prove this, be helpful at least in the preparation of labor and probably in the initiation of labor. And from there, then it's out of the hands of the acupuncture. It's really if a woman goes into labor, and we still don't understand really what triggers labor, if she goes into labor when she is, and she and her body and the baby are most prepared to go into it, the likelihood of a good outcome is good. The likelihood of a need for surgical intervention is lower,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's what we believe.
And I read an article talk about the after acupuncture treatment prior to labor, and their recovery from labor is better.
Is that right?
Yeah, so they're recovering from the labor. It's better than the group without acupuncture treatment.
So at what point do you administer the the treatment in that situation?
In the back, lower back.
I'm sorry, at what point in time?
Oh, that, well, about maybe a week before the
expected due date.
Well, there are two approaches, commonly used approaches. One is to prepare for labor, in which case we usually start in the 36th week of gestation. Now, in our studies, we're starting a week or two before labor induction because we're trying to catch them a little bit later and really trying to more initiate labor. But in practice, people either do it 36 weeks, weekly or so, there are different approaches, but that's one, or right around the time of labor to really initiate it.
I see, I see. So you're working on trying to, I guess, get the money for Ecumoms 3.
Right.
What will that involve?
So Ecumoms 1 was just this pilot study that demonstrated that we can do it and get the ideas, to get an idea of what the effects were. Ecumoms 2 is ongoing. So if there's anybody who is interested, who is a first-time mom who wants to be in a study, we would welcome their participation. Mm-hmm. That will be 120 women with a sham acupuncture group as well. So we're using that three group.
I see.
Ecumoms 3 is the latest NIH grant that we have. It's a very exciting one. I'm very pleased with this one. This one is looking at the mechanisms of acupuncture, where we're going to study the women who are getting acupuncture very intently. We're going to really try to figure out what's going on and try to understand the mechanism. Ecumoms 4, which will come hopefully soon thereafter, and we're
preparing
that.
Stay tuned for Ecumoms 4.
That would be a very large study, about 1,000 women, really looking to see, does it decrease the risk of cesarean section?
Well, that is certainly a noble goal. My guest next week is going to be talking about some of those issues and what a problem that is these days and continues to be. So I certainly wish you the best of luck with
that.
As the father of two cesarean-born children from a family that would have preferred not to have had to go that route.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, maybe that can really help that situation. That's wonderful. We're already getting short on time. I can't believe it. But I don't want to let our time run out without putting both of you on the spot a little bit. One at a time, whoever wants to go first can't. The Western mind, I think, the inquiring minds want to know, how do you think acupuncture actually works?
Well, basically in traditional Chinese medicine, they believe that acupuncture can improve the energy flow and can bring the body back to the balance. That's probably the most of it they believe.
Okay, the qi.
The qi, energy.
Yeah. Now, Wunyan, that too, Western culture, that still sounds a little spiritual, et cetera, et cetera. And, obviously the medical establishment in the West is going to need to, hear more than that. They've got to have that
I will
proof.
Give you a 30-second, very abbreviated explanation for why qi and what acupuncture may be doing is not at all incompatible with what we learn in Western medicine, in my opinion.
Terrific.
And very briefly, we know that there are electromagnetic fields that are generated by a single cell and a larger field that's generated by an organ. And proof of that is electrocardiogram, which is what we measure when we take electrocardiogram. It's the electromagnetic field generated by the heart. Now, we also know that acupuncture needles placed in the skin, as is usually done, there will be an electric current that is measurable between the two needles. And all it is these needles are acting as electrodes, and the body itself is supplying the energy, the battery,
and sometimes electrical impulses are sent down the needles right?
Yes, sometimes we put electricity in there. But even without that, the body will react to having metal electrodes placed into them by generating a current.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so those two things we know, and we also know that electromagnetic fields, external fields, interact with the body in some way. Sometimes we use it for therapeutic purposes, for radiation treatment, and we also believe and know that it can cause cancer. So all those are essentially undisputable facts, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
What may be happening, and here's a bit of a leap of faith, but it's not incompatible with Western science, is that these electrical conduction, these currents that are generated and measurable when you put the needles in, may and probably do, affect the electromagnetic fields generated by the various organs in the body. And so the question is, do these electromagnetic fields, do they that are generated by our own body, do they interact with our tissues in any way? Do they act like weak forces similar to external forces? And the answer is probably yes. We just don't understand, but probably yes. Mm-hmm. So the missing link is, might these electrical currents that are generated by acupuncture, might they affect the electromagnetic fields generated by our body in such a way as to help the healing process? We think they do in the acupuncture world. We have not proven that yet, but taken step by step, I think most of my medicine colleagues would accept the fact that that is a possibility, and we're not having to invoke things that are outside of our understanding, in my opinion.
Sure, sure. Remy, do you incorporate other Eastern medical practices into your practice?
Well, through Wen Yan. I mean, he and I work as a team.
So yeah,
he
does. Sure.
And to my life, I incorporate Tai Chi.
Ah, I see. Okay. Do you gentlemen think that there will ever really be a really full merger of Eastern and Western medicine?
Absolutely yes.
Absolutely yes.
Absolutely yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are the overall trends in that today?
Very favorable. Very, very favorable. The idea that Western medicine has limitations and that there are other valid approaches is accepted now by many people, and it's just good medicine to really try to incorporate the best of the worlds that are available. The trends are going in the right direction, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Are you seeing more and more patients come to you? Is your practice expanding?
Yes, yes, we definitely see that more and more patients coming. They try to get both Western and Eastern medicine attention.
And well, we are just about out of time already. It seems like the hour just started, and there's so much more I wish I could have asked you about, but hopefully we covered the territory pretty well. And I want to thank you both, because it's been an absolutely fascinating hour, and perhaps we can do it again.
Well, it's our pleasure.
Thank you very much. It was really
thank
our pleasure.
You.
And next week on Radio In Vivo, my guest is going to be, as I started to mention a minute ago, a local author and medical writer, Carol Winkleman. And a few years ago, her book called The Complete Guide to Pregnancy After 30 was published. And we will talk about that topic and the book and several other issues surrounding pregnancy and childbirth today, including the rate of cesarean sections, as we were discussing. So be sure to tune in for what should be a very timely discussion next week. Thank you for listening. This is Ernie Hood, and we will see you next week on Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science community, right here on volunteer-powered WCOM-FM, Carrboro and Chapel Hill.